Hola, Mexico! Welcome, and thanks for joining us here at Norm Nathan's Vault of Silliness. Sorry I'm late with this post. A slow recovery from an Alaskan vacation is my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. The Vault has gifted us with this jewel from July 29th and 30th, 1995. This show is packed full of great stuff. So much so that I've titled it, A Treasure Chest of Norm. The show begins with Norm speaking to a fantastic guest, Dennis Webb, who co-authored Greenberg's Guide to Marbles. Just a wonderful interview. Next is a wildly interesting caller who tells us about her business, glassblowing. She makes kaleidoscopes at her home studio. At the time, only 100 or so people in the world made them by hand. We switch next to another call in the subject of children gambling. Trust me, it's not a serious call. Next, a caller talks about a guest we had on recently, Joanna Cole, who wrote a book called Jump Rope Rhymes. Next up, a caller brings up Dapper O'Neill and the Irish Belly Dancer. Now we move to a super cool segment. We connect with WERE in Cleveland with Mitch Mann, Rick Gilly Gilmore, and Steve Wainstead in their show Night Talk. They have absconded with the dumb birthday game and play something called the stupid birthday game. They talk all things radio and silliness with Norm, and Ken Newman from Traffic joins the fun too. They even take some calls mixing people from Cleveland and the Boston area. For instance, we hear from Mike, the 45-year-old virgin, Tim from Franklin, Drew, who's calling on WERE, John in his car, who was chief engineer at one time at WJUL at the University of Lowell. Then there's a call from Pete, Bill, or Phil. I might have missed something there. And that's from Cleveland as well. And then Katie and Malden. There's a new show on WERE as well, and Elvis tells us all about it. And some wacky police blotter news. Moving on, we're back to Norm solo with a couple of unknown callers to go along with Ruth, the molasses baby, and Shirley asking for info on Jump Rope Rhymes. We leap to a weird segment that's pitched down slowly. There's a quick call, and then Jack Hart is under attack. Closing with a sponsor read by Jack that kicked open the door to his Broadway career. Not really. There's a lot more, so just sit back and enjoy this piece of broadcasting excellence. Episode 148, A Treasure Chest of Norm, begins now.
And that effort has been, I would say, for about 20 years. That's not 8 hours a day, of course. In my spare time and retired time.
Okay, because you were, let's see now, you were in the military service for a long time and civil service, not just for a long time, but nearly a half century. And one line in the biographical sketch, it says here, may I call you Dennis? Would that be okay?
Sure, yes, by all means, yes.
Okay, you can call me Norm, too, and we'll become really friendly before this is done.
Well, that's okay.
Okay, anyway, it says here, Dennis Webb has traveled in many foreign countries witnessing children at play. I can't think of anything that would be more fun than doing all of that kind of thing. And you remember the Archaeological Society of Maryland And on like this. Well, this is the most complete book on marbles. Maybe I haven't seen that many books on marbles. I don't know, but this is just so complete. I love the opening sentence or two. I want to hear your comments, obviously, more than I want to hear my reading of your book. But the opening line I thought was a real grabber. Just kneeling in the dirt and knuckling down for a game of marbles. This is a childhood memory shared by many generations of Americans. Before television, long before Nintendo, marbles were everywhere, in schoolyards, on playgrounds, even on city sidewalks. Playing marbles was a great American pastime. Is it still?
Yes. There's still quite a bit of marble playing going on. Not as much as there was back in the, the 20s, 30s. And 40s. Other things have pretty well taken over. However, we have had a national marbles tournament at Wildwood, New Jersey since 1923, and some very fine trophies and scholarships have been awarded. And, of course, here lately, the people down in the Tennessee-Kentucky border area have started a tournament. They call it Roly Holy. And then, of course, in the past 2 or 3 years, we've had the international tournaments in England for many, many years. But it's coming back. I would like to say, though, that, of course, I'm a product of the Great Depression. In my day, a boy carried three things, a pocket knife, a slingshot, and a bag of marbles. But
I'm a product of that same era,
but I would say if they did it nowadays, they'd probably be kicked out of school or something like that.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's a little bit different.
That pocket knife you're talking about, that was particularly lovely when you had a pair of boots, and remember, the little pocket was on the side.
And
you'd keep the knife in there.
Oh, yes.
The jackknife in there, and you really felt so manly.
Yeah.
And the slingshot, I don't know. We didn't bother so much with that, but we the marbles came in that little, what kind of a, you know, the bag. You have a picture of one of the bags. I don't know what that material was.
There are various kinds of bags, cloth or leather. Leather was the sort of favorite, and I might add that some of the marble companies actually put marble bags in some of their boxed items, and of course then they would have their company logo and everything on it, and those are really collectible now.
You have one thing that really made me very, very curious. You were describing, I don't have the page, that particular page in front of me, but I remember looking at that as I read your book, the chocolate covered marbles.
Yes.
I mean, what was that? I mean, people, the kids actually put the marbles in their mouth and lick off the chocolate? That sounds so dangerous.
Of course, they were forewarned about that. I think the box indicated that, but they didn't go and chomp down on it, you know, real hard.
I thought maybe, well, even while they're licking off the chocolate, they could swallow that thing so easily.
Well, it has happened. You know, Acroagate used to furnish marbles for Cracker Jack, and they were put in loose, and that happened.
Ooh.
And not too much was said about it, but after that, then they started putting it in a cellophane bag.
I would think so. What a way to go for a little kid to go choke on a marble. Gee.
But I can recall they used to sell Divinity candy as a, you know, 1 cent a piece. And, of course, that would be white, opaque, and sort of dusted on top. But there was a marble, and you could see it, but you couldn't tell whether it was a purple clay marble or one of the new beautiful purple slag marbles.
Yeah. You quote, as one of your sources, a man named Bertrand Cohen.
Bert Cohen, yes.
Bert Cohen, who's from around this area, the Boston
area.
Yes,
he lives in Boston.
Yes, as a matter of fact, he was a guest on the program several months ago.
He's a great friend of mine.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yes.
Now, you were talking about marble tournaments, and he had one at the Boston Common, I think.
Yes, he did.
Sometime, what, in May or June or sometime?
It was about that. That was a special that he put on. He invited some people from France to come over and demonstrate some of their types of games and so forth. He's known internationally, incidentally, for his marbles and stuff. He goes in mostly for the contemporary art glass. However, he's still a great promoter.
Yes, and I remember talking with him, and he mentioned not only as a matter of fact, people coming in to be part of that tournament from many, many countries throughout the world.
Yes.
Now, your book is in great detail describing how marbles are made and from what material. I say marbles, but actually the whole history of marbles or little round things or whatever you want to call them goes back, you have it going back to around, what, 300, 400 B.C. or maybe I'm missing the year, but they've been around for a very, very, very long time in some form or another.
About that, yes. I would like to say that where there were children, there were marbles.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Where there were children, there were marbles.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
And the Greeks say that the sphere is the most perfect form, and a sphere, of course, is a marble. And there's so many different games and everything, you know, you can play with it.
And they started out, now we call them marbles, and some marbles really are marbles.
Yes.
But they're made of, they've been made through the years of very different, various kinds of materials, as I understand.
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Ironically, the favorite stone type marble is the agate. The genuine agate, which were mostly made in Germany and shipped to the United States. And these were the prize shooters. As time went on, some of the factories started trying to imitate, the design, the layers and so forth, and they would call them aggies or agates, you know, but they were actually glass. Some companies even took the form, like Vitro Agate, Champion Agate, but they didn't make the stone marble, they made the glass one,
yeah.
You know, which is ironically.
When I was a kid, I've found very few people who ever used this term for playing marbles. We didn't call it marbles or agates. We called them stickers. And I haven't found anybody that ever used that term. Have you ever come across any area at all that talked where the kids talked about playing stickers?
No, I haven't. As I've seen it through all of my traveling, a lot of names are regional in nature, you know, and a lot of these names the kids develop themselves. The most popular name, I guess, is Mibs, and if you're a marble player, you're a Mibster. The clay marbles were called commies, meaning common clay,
not communist.
No, not the political type. No, they were commies, you know, common marbles, common clay, you know.
Yeah, obviously in Everett, on Vine Street, between Nickel Street and Union Street, that's the only place in the entire world, which was where I grew up, incidentally, where they actually call them stickers. I had that, Aggies or marbles, we thought that was kind of sissy, yeah. Though. They're, you know, yeah. we had our own name. But you have some great pictures of different kinds of designs and everything, including cartoons. Were some marbles used as advertising things?
Yes, they were. Those were premiums or promotional marbles, and they have really become quite the fad in these past few years. And it's amazing the number of Pizza Hut, Coca-Cola, and all of these, they're really using those as a promotional or advertising thing. In fact, I'm having a couple made up now just for my own book, and there'll be a green transparent marble and another 1-inch cat eye with green veins. Of course, that alludes to Greenberg, of course, you know, using the green color.
Right. Now, that sounds beautiful. Have there been many changes in the manufacturing of marbles through the years? I would guess there must be, because we have all kinds of machinery and stuff now.
There have been quite a few. They've been putting a luster, or what we used to say, a carnival glass effect on it. And some of them are, as they roll out of the rollers, they're very hot, and they spray them with a chemical. And it gives them a sort of a luster or a sheen. The people in Mexico, they sprinkled small bits of different colored glass on the molten glass as it's coming down through the rollers, and it comes up with a beautiful marble. I like to call it confetti. which is a beautiful marble. They've come up with some new stuff.
Because when I was a kid, of course, a marble was a marble. It was to play the game with, and you never thought about... You thought about collecting them only because the more you got, the more fun it was playing.
Oh, yes.
And you'd win marbles that your friends would lose if you beat them and all that kind of stuff. But your book has so many beautiful different kinds of marbles that you begin thinking about collecting them just as a collectible item, and some of them apparently worth quite a good deal.
Particularly the early handmade ones. I would like to have gotten more color photographs in, of some of the other types. But, of course, color photography, getting it in print is rather expensive. However, I did get some in my first edition that I don't have in my second edition. So maybe between the two we'll get something.
Yeah, because you've got some beautiful, beautiful photography. In this whole thing.
Yes, I think that really made the book.
Oh, it really did. Now, how did you get involved in all of this? Were you a marbles player when you were a kid, and you expanded your interest beyond that? How did this come about?
Well, yes, I had an interest in marbles when I was young, and before I went into the military. But after I started traveling and retired. I'd stop at one or two of the marble factories and talk to the people, and I suddenly realized, if somebody doesn't record this, if somebody doesn't get this in print, it's going to be lost. So I made up my mind, why not write a book about it? And it was amazing... the cooperation and everything that I got from these people. And you could assume right away that you were wanted and liked if they would take you around to what they call the hot end. That's where they do the melding and stuff, and show you how the machinery work. But I think the best thing of all, though, is... if they would take you back into some of their old warehouses, where they had overruns and stuff like that, and I hear they'd have, packages and stuff that went way back when. And, of course, you walk out with a box full of stuff,
Yeah, you got pictures of a lot of that kind of thing. It was just absolutely beautiful. Now, this is the second edition, the one that I have here.
Yes.
It came out last year.
Yes.
And you put out the first edition was sometime in the
1988.
Yeah, you can tell I go back a few years. I forget what year we're in.
1988.
1988 was the first edition. Anyway, now, what you mentioned Bert Cohen, who puts on... marbles exhibitions and all that kind of stuff. You said he was a friend of yours. You were
very close.
I just wondered, all the marbles people kind of know each other. You must there must be just a handful of you, I would think.
Well, no, not a handful. We have about 15 different societies, and we have about 10 different meets and stuff each year. And, the old-timers, the hardcore ones, they get to know each other. But, of course, there's the general membership, and they get brought in. You educate them, you talk to them, and they get... the women are just as fascinated as the men. Well, same thing with the girls and the boys. And I think the real interest there is glass. Just glass alone.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how in a sense, we've been much more sexist in the past than we are now, because you have...
It's not now with marbles.
Well, no, you have... But the reason I say that is you have on... I'm looking at page 99 here, Acro Agates, and underneath it says Acro Agate box number 230 cardboard, so forth, which is unique and scarce because the central figure... is a girl. There are three kids there kneeling down playing marbles. Normally, you say, previous covers did not show girls, only boys.
That's right. And that was about one of the first ones, first one of the companies to actually do that. We used to say, well, you know, the girls played jacks and the boys played marbles, you know, but it's not that way anymore. Some of these girls are top-notch shooters. But the fascinating thing about the glass is a lot of the formulas that were used to make pressware, you know, ashtrays and stuff like that, they use that same recipe and formula to make marbles. Same colors, you know?
What different kinds of games are played with marbles besides the ones that we know? You mentioned Chinese checkers, for example, would be one that uses that.
Yes.
What are some of the others?
Well, there's some of the solitaire games, you know, like they call General Grant's game. You know, you put all the marbles on and you jump one and pick it up and you're supposed to end up with one in the center. Fox and geese. Berea College, Crafts College in Kentucky, manufacture and sell a real attractive line of some of the different board games. And they're really beautiful because they make them out of cherry and walnut and oak, you know. They're really collectible.
It is nice to know the kids are still, at least some kids are still interested in that kind of thing in a time when we have so many electronic things and all of that. And to go back to, you know, the simpler kinds of stuff, like marbles and its use in various kinds of games, it's maybe for us old guys, it's kind of reassuring that to know that some things don't change all that dramatically.
Well, we're attracting them. My wife and I, we say adopted, but the three kids next door, they're young, and they have to come over and check up on us now and then, but they used to come over every day, and I'd get out a bunch of marbles, and hey, we were shooting marbles all over the room.
I think that's beautiful.
And they loved it. They loved it. And, of course, I'd work up bags of marbles for them, and it was always an excuse for them to get out of the house. We're going to go next door and see the webs, you know.
Well, the book is just great, and I've had a great time talking with you about it, and we've just barely scratched the surface because there's so many good pictures and so much information on how marbles were made through the years and the various different kinds of products that were used and all that kind of stuff.
I like the bibliography, 210 entries in a bibliography, and I like to say this was the first comprehensive book ever written about marbles. I like to say that.
Okay, I would guess so. A bibliography and selected literature, and it goes on and on and on. That's true. And it's published, the book is called Greenberg's Guide to Marbles. I assume that means that the Greenberg series includes a whole lot of other different kinds of collections.
Yes, he puts his name on it, yeah.
Okay, and it's by Dennis Webb, the gentleman that you're listening to right now. And published by Greenberg Books out of Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And anybody interested in the address and all that kind of stuff can write to me and ask me about it. I'll give you the address.
Great.
Plus the fact that I would guess there's got to be some stores that carry this kind of... Would these be hobby shops who carry them, or regular bookstores?
Not so much hobby shops. I have found that although the bookstore may not stock the book, a person can order the book from the bookstore.
Okay, good. And it's beautifully put together. It's just lovely just to look at it.
I like the hardback pictures.
Oh, they're beautiful. Yeah, they're beautiful. The cover is great, too. All these lovely marbles. You want to reach in and wish
those
you could pull them out.
Those are all in my collection.
Really? Oh, beautiful. You can get a whole bunch of them in what look like candy jars.
Well, that was just to add a little bit of glitz.
No, I think it looks great. I think it's nice. I like it.
That was one of the ideas of the design people.
Dennis Webb, thank you very, very much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me, too.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
I have three glass blowers that work for me. I make kaleidoscopes and I used the marbles in the kaleidoscopes.
Now, you don't have to explain that. How do you happen to have glass blowers working for you?
They contract. They're private contractors for me.
But, I mean, do you have a business?
Sure, I make kaleidoscopes.
Oh, you make kaleidoscopes? You just said that. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. and that went over my head. So you are in the kaleidoscope business.
Yes, I am.
I haven't even seen a kaleidoscope in a long time.
Oh.
You've been making them for a long time now?
Well, it's been 7 or 8 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding. Now, you do that out of your house or where?
Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah.
I have a lovely studio built into a very old home.
You make the kaleidoscopes yourself, or how do you do that?
I make them myself, but the ones that relate to marbles are actually triangular, about 8 inches long, and they're triangular with a mirror in the middle at a 60-degree angle. And at the end, I solder on a little cage that I put a marble in. Now, you have to have a handmade marble, because the machine-made marbles have dead spots and bubbles. And if you have a handmade marble, then you can dictate the colors and the designs. And therefore, if you turn the marble with your finger, or I say tickle it from the end, you get just an absolutely vibrant, gorgeous kaleidoscopic image.
Isn't that something? How did you get involved in that business?
Well, I made one from a kit years ago, and I gave it to my dad for Christmas. And he was so taken with it, he said, "We need to start a company." So we did, and the company's called Dad and Me. And that was about 7 or 8 years ago, and probably about 2,000 kaleidoscopes ago.
Now, where do you distribute these?
I sell them wholesale all over the world.
Now, how do you do that? Do you have international representatives?
I go to big gift shows, like the Boston Gift Show, the New York Gift Show, and I belong to the American Craft Council, and they have, which is the ACC, and they have wholesale shows for artists all over the country through the year, and that puts you in the wholesale market. And because there's only about 100 of us in the world that make them by hand, it's just sort of word of mouth. Most of our work is wholesale.
Okay, now where would they be available now? You say wholesale, you sell them wholesale, but then these shops that buy them from you, they sell them retail, obviously.
Oh, sure.
So where would you find them? Would you find them in stores right around the Boston area as well as around the world?
Oh, sure. I have some Boston clients. Mine are reasonably high-end. They go from about $130 up to $1,000.
Really?
I make them out of gold and silver and wood and brass. In the Boston area, I have a store that I sell to in Copley Place, and one on, let me see, what's the name of that street, that nifty little yuppie street where they have...
On Newbury Street, you mean?
Yes, I have one there, and I have a couple out in the Framingham Natick area. I have quite a few on Cape Cod, because my dad lives down there.
You're doing okay.
Well, I'm surviving. It's hard work.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And it's hot work these days because you do a lot of it with a torch.
Your dad must be very proud of you.
Well, he is.
And it's your company's called Dad and Me?
Dad and Me.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice.
But anyhow, I actually didn't call for an ad. I called to tell you about marbles. And it's really quite interesting. I actually even have a marble blower in Murano, Italy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they make them, they still make them with the little pressed wood jigs. And all the, it's almost like using a couple of wooden spoons. It's really quite interesting. There aren't very many people that make marbles by hand. I mean, you had to scour the face of the earth to find them. Marble Collectors of America or something, which is in Northborough, Mass. They have a post office box there.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. In fact, that company is listed in Dennis Webb's book. They mention that company as one of the marble companies across the world. Kind of thing on top of an orange crate.
Mm.
You know, you draw a circle, paint a circle on top of an orange crate, and you put the numbers on there like a roulette wheel, and in the middle, you would use one of the bottle caps and then half of a clothespin, and that would be your roulette wheel. You know, the you'd spin that around, and you'd bet some would bet soda pop bottle caps,
yep.
Or others might bet match covers.
Match covers is another item. I used to have stacks of match cover books. And you know, there were different things that were more rare, but what all this brings out the fact that kids play today, their play is managed. It's electronic or it's managed.
Well, to a very large extent it is. Adults have gotten in to the kids playing business, and I think they've spoiled it.
Well, so many things we used to make for ourselves out of boxes from the fruit store. We get boxes and put skates under it.
That's right, and you had scooters.
And you had a scooter.
Yeah.
You used to make things out of what orange boxes were made out of. They were just thin, and we used to weave it in and out. Lots of things like that. The kids had to be... That helped kids grow up and be creative. Now everything is managed. Everything is by the numbers.
No, that's true. And we used to play baseball on our own. You know, if you had a cap, you thought you were doing pretty well. And then if you saved up enough to buy a T-shirt, wow, that was pretty good. Now kids are in full uniform and they play
organized.
What was that
about a cat? You said a cat?
A cap, a C-A-P.
I thought you said something. Because we used to play something called Warner Cat.
No, I'm talking about a baseball cap.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you would have very little uniform. I mean, you know, a cap, maybe a T-shirt.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, kids are all dressed up with full baseball uniforms, and they're playing an organized Little League baseball. Remember when kids, especially girls, would do the jump roping bit, not just by themselves, but they'd be one at each end of the jump rope, and some kids in the middle doing all kinds of fancy jumping things.
Oh yeah, we all did that.
And then, but there would be rhymes that would go along with it. That you would, you know, as you jumped, you said these rhymes. Do you recall any of the rhymes? Do you remember anything that you said back or used to sing back then?
Well, I used to say them too. I've gotten if I can think of them.
Okay, this book has a whole bunch of them. Most of them I don't remember, but one is like. Let's see.
We used to say something all the time.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, you couldn't just jump rope quietly. You had to say a rhyme. It's like, I run and around I go. Clap my hands and nod just so.
That's
I lift my knee and slap my shoe. When I go out, let Jenny come in. Come in. And then Rachel would jump in and she'd de-jump rope. It all started when I mentioned a rhyme that I remembered. If you can control yourself, I'll tell you what it is again. You maybe remember me saying a couple of other times. The one that we used to like was, old man Kelly had a pimple on his belly, his wife cut it off and made it into jelly. Remember that one?
Someone I think you told him that you thought that was part of Larry Glick's paraphernalia.
Was it the Irish, because the person who did the Irish belly dance or the song, I know, was Dapper O'Neill.
Yeah, right.
No, I know that, but I thought they had phrased it differently, that it was a comedy routine. I didn't think it was the song.
Oh.
I'm aware of the Dapper O'Neill recording.
Yeah.
But I thought there was, the way they phrased it, I thought this was something else, something different, and was some kind of a, sketch.
I thought he was looking for the song itself.
Oh, okay.
He mentioned,
the dumb birthday game rules and taking it to Chicago and calling it the stupid birthday game. So we'll get a chance to talk to them. That'll be kind of fun. And love to continue to talk to you. Mitch Mann, Gilly and Steve Wanstead.
Gilly.
Oh, I'm sorry. It says Gilly.
Yeah, it's Gilly.
Yeah, see, I'm taking English as a second language, and I don't read that well. Anyway, you guys were WERE in Chicago?
Cleveland.
It is Cleveland.
Yeah, we called the newspapers, Norm, and everything.
It's
going to be big news.
Yeah, we've got the local paper, the Plain Dealer, reporters, everything.
No, I knew it was. I've been fighting with our producer, who's about 12 years old and obviously doesn't know where anything is. No, ERE is one of the major stations in Cleveland, has been. But we've had so many changes in broadcasting stations in Boston, I thought, well, maybe they're going crazy in Cleveland, too. I didn't want to think that we're the only ones that go nuts.
Did you call the Globe?
I call the Globe. I call the Boston Herald.
Okay.
And also the Lawrence Eagle Tribune and the Salem Evening News. Oh, everything, everything. I know that, Bill Randall, was that his name, who was a big disc jockey?
Yeah, Bill Randall was a biggie, and what's the other guy's name? Smoochie Gordon?
I don't know Smoochie Gordon. Was that his real name?
Yeah, Bill Smoochie Gordon, and he'd always close the show by saying, and stay smoochy, everybody. And he was big here in the 50s and 60s, and now he's back on WERE here again sometime before we're on. I don't know when, a couple hours before, I think.
You're still one of the big giant radio stations.
Well, yeah, ERE isn't as big as it used to be in the old days, but now that we're here,
yeah, we like to think that we're really something.
We've got the top ratings around here. So
now tell me about you guys. Now, Mitch, just let me see if I can recognize your different voices. Which one is Mitch Mann?
I'm Mitch Mann.
You're a Mitch Mann. Okay.
I'm the Mitch Mann.
Mitch Mann, hi.
Hello, how you doing there?
Hi, remember Sorry. What? We have disc jockeys around here still sound like that. So
all
hi.
Right.
We do, too. Yes.
And Jilly and Steve Wanstead.
Gilly.
I'm sorry.
You're doing this on purpose, Norm, aren't you?
I really am. Just for a laugh.
We listen to your show, Norm. We know how you are.
Yeah, I'm the guy that called you and told you that we stole your dumb birthday game.
Who is this? Gilly?
Gilly, yeah.
Gilly. Now, Gilly and Steve, are you brothers?
No, Steve Wainstead is our news director. He's out in the green room. I can see him on the video camera.
Yeah, but a little bit later on tonight, Norm, he'll be coming in and doing some of the news that we normally do around here. It's our police blotters.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Yeah, can we broadcast that, too?
Sure. Just some dumb little news stories that get in those local papers, you know, that you wonder why in the world they called the cops.
Yeah, someone stealing someone's Italian sausage out of a fridge. Or
throwing bananas at people.
And it's real. It's actual. We like it.
We don't make it up.
Does he start out by saying, now on the lighter side of the news? Something like that, huh?
No, it's pretty slow and dry, actually. Oh. Yeah.
Now, are you guys normally on through the night?
We're on from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m.
No kidding. So you have live programming through the night, at least through part of the night.
Well, and then Mr. Wainstead is going to get his own show sometime in August, and he'll be on from 2 to 4 a.m. or maybe till 5. Well, so, yeah, we're trying to get live programming on the station all through the night.
Oh, that's really nice, because very few stations have live programming.
I listen to you all the time, and there's frightfully little else to listen to. Not to say that you aren't the best, and that's why I listen to you, but, you know, some of those shows are so dry and political, and, you know, they're talking about heavy issues on a weekend night.
I know. One more thing about that I think so far is the bloodstains of the O.J. Simpson trial. And you say, oh, screw you. I mean, how many times do we have to go through this day after day, hour after hour?
And they all sound like Arthur Godfrey.
I hadn't noticed that so much, you know.
Well, one of the things we're proud of here at Night Talk, Norm, is our ability not to talk about O.J.
In fact, we haven't mentioned him in months.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that. We'd rather talk about, you know, more non-thinking kind of subject.
No, but as a matter of fact, you're my kind of guys. Yep. I don't know why I just brought it up, and I violated my own rules.
Yep, see?
Well, now, you're on for hours and hours, though, aren't you? You're on from, like, 11 to 4 or 5?
They love me, and once you get stuck in a microphone, in front of a microphone here at night, they lock the doors. Nobody wants to come in, and so you're kind of stuck.
That's what Hope Schauer said that last week when we were coordinating this. She said, you guys have like a staff? You have people there? She goes, it's me and Norm, and that's it.
That's about the size of it, yeah.
I said, what about Jack Hart? She said, oh, he's like down the street in the Prudential Building or something?
Well, that's right. The Prudential Building, you know, it's a few miles away, and that's for the traffic stuff. Tonight it's Ken Newman.
Oh, yeah.
Who's it? You want to talk to Ken Newman?
Yeah.
Could you get him? I'll plug him in and see if we can bring Ken Newman on. Ken is the weekend guy. Ken announced his engagement on the Lisa, what's her name? That pretty lady on network television. That's one of these cuckamamie talk shows.
Lisa from Entertainment Tonight.
Yes.
Lisa...
Lisa Hart?
No.
Lisa
Gibbons? No.
Lisa Gibbons. Yeah, that's the one. It. Yeah, no. He was on Lisa Gibbons' show announcing his engagement because it was in an unusual way. He made a film which they showed at a drive-in theater at which he took his fiancée, and so he kind of proposed to her from the screen.
Oh.
And so as a result, when Lisa Gibbons had a show outlining some of the really weird ways people got engaged and stuff, there was Ken Newman.
Well, that's adorable. I got engaged recently, what, about a month and a half ago?
Yeah, it was probably about a month and a half ago.
And I announced it here, and nobody cared about it.
No, we didn't get one call. In fact, I think the only call we did get was... Hang Gilly or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, ring my
yeah,
neck.
Yeah, someone called us to ring your neck.
Somebody calls every week, Norman, says, I'm going to ring Gilly's neck, and then they hang up. I don't know what it means.
We have what do we call them before? Minions.
Minions? Sycophants?
Okay.
They're our little followers.
That's right.
Okay, are we all set with Ken Newman? Is he ready to go?
Did you say the traffic guy?
He does traffic tonight. Okay.
So you have traffic all night long out there in Boston,
We do. At one time we had it every half hour. Now it's just every hour.
Yeah, see, in Cleveland we don't have enough traffic to do traffic.
Yeah, okay, there's a car on I-90 heading towards Westlake.
We have the same problem here at night, but we fake it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we make up traffic jams.
It's not some guy beating his chest going, I'm coming.
No, not for the helicopter.
Hey, you there, Ken?
Yes, I am.
Ken, congratulations from Night Talk on your recent engagement.
Oh, thank you.
Although I must admit I'm really jealous because I got engaged and I wasn't on TV, but I didn't make a fun little movie or anything.
Oh, no, I went all out for the publicity.
Yeah, the only reason, as a matter of fact, after he was on Lisa Gibbons, he and his fiancée, and they got engaged, he broke off the whole thing. It was only a publicity gimmick.
It was a whole career movie.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Big Lisa Marie, Michael Jackson type.
Just a shameless publicity.
Well, just stay away from the little boy thing. It's not worth it.
Hey, listen, tell me about you guys now. What kind of a show do you do out there at ERE? Is it, well, it must be, I can almost guess the way you're talking
about.
Yeah,
well, actually, Norm, it's kind of funny because we're from college radio, both of us. We have a lot of experience in college radio. I was a DJ for a while, but we're trying to bring college radio back into commercial radio here. We're trying to do something different.
Right. We want a level of professionalism below that is normally considered, what's needed for professional radio.
Really?
Oh, I think the only creative radio is either public radio or college radio.
Amen.
Where, you know, as soon as people learn how to conduct themselves on radio, they become boring.
As soon as they learn how to make money.
We're under the belief that AM is now the true alternative.
Right.
Oh, it really is. FM. Now, see, it may be my age, I don't know, but I go up and down the FM dial, and for the most part, stations don't sound that much different. And then the announcer will come in and say, hi, more rock, less talk. We play 733 records in a row. Let's start our medley now, and I'll be back a week from next Wednesday with a time check.
Yeah, then it's nothing.
It's got to be so boring to be a part of that. I'm so glad you guys are not hung up on that.
No, it's fun, though, because, if you're too predictable, I think, I mean, why even listen? If people just know what they expect to hear from some of the normal, boring talk shows like that, especially that stuff. I hate to talk about politics, It's just, I don't know, maybe I'm just apathetic. Maybe I just don't care about politics.
No, because I do care about politics, but I don't like to talk about it on radio.
Yeah, you're involved with politics in your hometown, aren't you, somehow?
You know all that stuff, don't you? You funny guy.
Well, I see. Yeah. I told Hope Schauer that, and she said, Gilly, you're sick. You listen to Norm Nathan all night. I said, I listen to Bob Raleigh. I listen all the time.
Well, that's really very, very flattering. You know, I do care about politics a lot, but see, here's a problem I have with it. When people call, and especially if they disagree with me, and which is very often, I want to say, you don't know anything, you're stupid, you're really dumb, and why did you bother to call me, you nincompoop? See, and you can't really conduct a program
like
that.
Well, we do. Actually, it's kind of funny you should say that, Norm. Because
really?
Those are the kinds of things we say.
Yeah, we would say, you nincompoop, and then we'd hang up on them. But I heard a while back, a lady called and she wanted you to cut a ribbon at a peach festival or something, and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts was taking over some peach farm, and she wanted to invite you, and she had all these political questions, and then you were really frustrated. You said, I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't understand. And I was thinking, well, neither does anybody else. I don't know where she was going.
I don't know either. Now, how long have you guys, both guys are just out of college?
No, I've been out of college. Well, actually, I am, but I've been doing radio for, I don't know, 6-7 years now.
Well, you did it in college also then?
Yeah, I did it professionally, and then I went to college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I did radio for a while and said, boy, I better go to school. This is horrible business.
There's no money in it.
And then I went to college, and I'm just doing it as a hobby now. Gilly and I just do the one show a week here. We've been doing this, boy, for 2 years already.
Oh, that's really nice. Do you get a good response, a lot of calls and stuff?
We're the highest-rated program on ARE right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, the calls vary. You know, we have people that call up and want us to kill ourselves on the air. And then, you know, we have the people that call us up and really love us. So.
And they love the stupid birthday game, which, of course, is a direct ripoff of the dumb birthday game.
When do you do the stupid birthday? Is that usually on now or 1:30?
Yeah, usually now we do it. So we do it here and there. We don't do it every week.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And in fact, we've taken the stupid birthday game and made it into other games.
Like what?
Like If Only They'd Live.
Yeah, that's our favorite one, If Only They'd Live.
That's dead people, famous dead people, and if they were still alive, how old would they be now?
As a matter of fact, somebody suggested that we ought to do that.
I heard that, and I thought maybe they could rip us off.
Maybe they were ripping you off.
And we have music to our game, too.
Now, how is that? How do you work that?
We've added music.
Yeah, we have that music handy there?
Here's the music when we ask the question.
And the next person we have to guess is lovely Natalie Wood. She passed away. They said, have a few drinks, but don't go overboard. If only Natalie Wood had lived, how old would she be now? Tom. And then we'd ask Tom.
Yeah, we like our cheesy music. And then we've got music for
when they answer.
And if I can get it, there we go.
Well, the correct answer was little Natalie Wood would be 107 and a half. Thank you just owed so much. Wait a minute, I don't do that.
Wait a minute.
We don't want to copy everything.
The next thing you know, one of you is going to change your name to mine. I got to draw the line somewhere.
It's Nathan here.
Norm.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I used to use my formal name when I first got into radio. That is Norman Nathan, which is my real name. And I found at the first station I ever worked at, I was 18 years old, and I followed a guy. This is going to be a boring story, so if you want to go out and go to the bathroom or anything, be my guest. But the announcer was a guy named Frank Fallon, was the sports guy. He'd say, since I followed a guy named Nelson Norman, they would assume that my name was Nathan Norman. So I get counted with that. Thank you very much. I say, it's 6:45. It's time to check out sports with Frank Fallon. Get a load of this intro. Take it, Frank.
Wow.
I thought of that myself. And he would come on and say, thank you very much, Nathan Norman, and good evening, sports fans. Except he would say, actually, thank you very much, Nathan Norman, and good evening, sports fans, because he had a very heavy local accent. And I just, no matter what I did, I couldn't convince him that my name was the other way around.
Now, I heard you say something last night, because I do listen all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
And you said something about you weren't always a talk show host, that you just started this sometime in the recent past?
I started, I don't know, in the 80s probably, and this kind of show maybe 8 or 9 years ago. That's all. I was a disc jockey. Well, I did a lot of interviews and stuff. I was a jazz disc jockey is what I was for part of it. I've failed at a lot of things. You know what's the worst thing? I get it because I want to ask you, too, the worst assignment you guys have ever had. One time, the Boston newspapers were on strike. So we at the station I worked for at that time was owned by a newspaper. So we would broadcast all kinds of features that were in the newspaper that normally would not be on radio, one of which was the obituaries. Now, I've been doing the all-night show, which was the jazz show, and I'd had guests on, and you know how you loosen yourself up during the night so you can be silly and relaxed and all that. So by the time we got to the morning show, where I had to be serious and do at the Hymanson Funeral Home, Josephus, Sam, beloved husband, all that kind of stuff, and visiting hours, I couldn't keep a straight face or a straight voice on that. And it's not nice if you're listening and you're with the bereaved.
Right.
To have people laughing
and
at you.
Sniggering.
day.
And now, somebody bit the big one.
Yeah.
George Joseph.
They're having visiting hours. The wait will be 7 to 9 on Tuesday night.
There'll be drinks afterwards.
That's right.
In fact, it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've already been at the table with the drinks myself now. Won't you join me? And so I would start trying to tape several hours while I was still doing the all-night show. Somehow I got a list of these obituaries, and I never could do it, and I begged the management. I said, please don't make me do that. Anyway, they didn't care. They hated my guts, and so that was probably the toughest assignment I've ever had. Isn't that an interesting story? What do you think?
I enjoyed it a lot.
You want to buy the movie rights?
The movie rights.
I notice you're not talking about stealing that feature from me. You know?
I was just thinking, you know, they just don't do anything like that anymore. And I was thinking, well, probably because I've heard about all those people getting their houses broken into. I mean, that's terrible when they're away at a funeral.
Oh, that's right. Well, no, this was the newspaper strike was on, so they had no other way of getting the information except that.
Right. So you're providing a service.
Don't we always?
Right. Well, of course, our show, we like to think of it as a public service. Sure, but we don't giggle during the obits. We can hold a straight face,
because they used to have, you know, even before strikes on small stations, they would have little local features on little suburban stations. Did you guys work on any tiny suburban stations?
Well, college radio, but
I worked at a station in Toledo at a classic rock station, and I 12 hours of it straight.
Wow.
I mean, it was a very long shift.
Oh, that is a long shift.
And it was pretty bad. I had bad dreams for probably several weeks after that.
Well, you know, and we worked Christmas Eve. Well, we were going to work Christmas Eve, but they decided here they were going to do the same thing one year and play Christmas music.
Right.
Which, this is a talk station. Why they played Christmas music for 12 hours?
No, we do it here, too, and we don't even have a music license.
Oh, really?
No, because they figure we're talking news, so why do we need to pay that exorbitant sum? You know, it's only Westinghouse radio and television and washing machines and whatever else God knows they make. And so they figured, you know, why waste that money?
I think it's important that, you know, if we have the opportunity to broadcast on a holiday, we jump on it just because the people out there that have to work, you know, it's nice to have something to listen to. I remember Larry King used to do that. He used to work holidays.
Yeah, no, I always have. But here we do the same thing as you're talking about. They have these tapes of holiday music. Gives me the night off anyway, but anyway, that's the way they do that. But the smaller stations at one time used to broadcast things like "What's New in Pink and Blue," you know, sponsored by a local dairy or something, and that would be the announcement of births.
Ah.
Born at the Salem Hospital to Sam and Mordecai Wainstead, a son. Felicia, you know, whatever that was. There are, you know, I don't know how many really boring shows you've had to go through. If I could have back just half the time I spent doing shows that were so incredibly boring, I could live to maybe be 112 or something.
Well, I think you're very entertaining, you know, to listen to. I just find that, of course, you can tell, I can tell, because we're doing a radio show, you know, and you kind of tell these things when no one's calling. You and the traffic man talk for 45 minutes in a 4 to 5 hour when no one's calling. And I was thinking, that's got to be tough if it's just you and your phone screener. Wait, he's not done laughing yet.
Especially with the traffic guy.
Well, I mean, you know, I've heard you do. Of course, Jack Hart is hilarious. I think that guy's got a shtick for every moment, you know. And you guys talked about, I don't know what you talked about one night, shoelaces or something for 40 minutes.
And I listened. Yeah, and not only did you listen, but that's something we would talk about for 40 minutes.
No, yeah, Jack, remember, Ken, we used to do traffic reports every half hour through the night.
I enjoy that because I used to get to be on live. Now it's kind of, I just sort of get to do the traffic and then...
I know the announcer who does the news introduces you, so I don't get to talk to you very much now. Except when we do the dumb birthday game. Which used to be called the stupid birthday game until it was ripped off from us.
That's from a station in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. It's on WERE in Cleveland.
Well, what kind of traffic report would there be in the 4 o'clock hour?
Well, at one time, like, for example, around 4:30 on a Saturday morning, I would bring on Jack Hart, and he would say, this is when we were introducing him live and talking, and he'd say, traffic is beginning to pick up with delivery trucks delivering their merchandise to the local stores. And I'd say, what are they delivering, Jack? And he'd say, milk and candy. And I said, they must be delivering bread and canned corn. And we would drag them out forever with that kind of, well, that really is boring radio. Why am I bringing that up now?
Well, I thought it was funny when I called you and told you that we stole your dumb birthday game. The next night you went on right before you did the game and you said, now we're going to do the nationally known dumb birthday game. Thank you just so much.
I think that's great. But now let's get back to what's new in pink and blue and birth announcements from the Beverly Hospital. Thank you.
Now, how are we going to coordinate our phone callers here, Mitchell?
You want to take some phone calls?
Yeah, we have some phone callers here. People might have, us Cleveland people might have some questions, so...
Okay, just do it any way you would like. I'll tell you the truth, I don't have a whole lot of commercials this hour, and okay. I can easily put them off till later, just a couple of cockamamie Ovaltine things, and I'm getting sick of those.
Yeah, so we get the gold bond over and over again.
Oh, we do that too, yeah. Boy, where does it itch? And don't tell me, I don't care to know. But why don't you just do the show the way you'd like to do it, and I'll just kind of tag along if you'd like.
Sure. Itched and burned was very uncomfortable.
There they are again now,
the gold bond. All right, well, our phone system's a little new here, Norm, so we're going to try this, and hopefully we are successful.
Fingers on the dump button.
Okay.
Hello?
Hey,
Mike.
Hi, I'm back.
How are you?
Hi.
Do you have a question for Norm Nathan of WBZ in Boston?
please have a question.
Question is, what's the most popular topic you're discussing in the show?
Yeah, Mike asked a lot of silly questions.
Okay, the most popular topic of discussion in the Boston area on our station?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
That's what I meant.
Yeah. There aren't any. I don't know what to say to you.
Yeah, Mike calls us a lot. And
I'll tell you a little secret, Norm, about Mike.
Yeah.
He's a 45-year-old virgin.
Yeah.
He freely admits that on the radio. And I think we have Cleveland's only 45-year-old virgin calling our show.
It's something we're proud of.
you must have that kind of a program where you attract clean living and boring people.
Yeah, with the dump button doesn't even say anything about it anymore. It's all worn off. It has more to do with our demographic, actually.
Just one very serious note. Then we have some calls here. I'm going to ask people. Would you mind if we put some on here? Might want to ask you a question.
Oh, no, we don't mind at all.
Okay, our number here is 617, is the area code of Boston, 254-1030. If you're out in the Cleveland area, don't do the 617. Do the Cleveland area
code. Yeah, our number here is area code 216-578-1300.
Oh, that's a great number. That has sexual overtones. Did you know that?
Yeah, so we call ourselves the Big 13.
Yep.
Oh, geez. Oh,
the
oh,
Big
man.
13 in Cleveland.
I don't know whether I can explain that to the boss when we have our meeting Monday morning. But anyway, that's 617-254-1030 is our number. Just one serious note, in a sense. I worked at one station in Boston with a guy who had been in Cleveland at might have been your station. Jim Runyon, does that name sound familiar?
No.
He died several years ago, and they had a big event for him. He was a nice man. He only stayed here about 2 years, and I think he hated this whole area and went back to Cleveland. And they had a big thing for him at Cleveland Stadium one night. Before the one of the Indians games or something. But anyway, it's Jim Runyon. Maybe some of your listeners would remember him. Let's go to Tim, who's calling us here. Tim is in the town of Franklin. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Norm?
Are you a 40-year-old virgin also? Because I'm trying to match everything these guys say.
Well, I have three kids, so I guess I'm not a virgin anymore.
Oh, jeez. Okay, then go on anyway. What the heck?
I just was wondering if there was any kind of a friendly rivalry between the two stations like there is between the Patriots and the Browns.
I knew this was going to happen. I was at both Patriots games.
Were you?
Actually, and it was kind of the playoff game was kind of a violent scene for Patriots fans. I was quite impressed how many of you from Boston actually came down. There was a good percentage. But after the game, the Cleveland fans know how it is. They're, you guys are okay. Bledsoe's going to be good someday, blah, blah, blah.
Cleveland people are basically friendly. I don't think people are mean-spirited around here.
Well, we've been waiting for a long time for a good team, so.
Yeah, and the Browns have had some good teams in the recent past. However, they just haven't been able to put it over the top.
They're always just a tick short.
Just a tick short. But, you know, you guys are, we play again this year, and we're going to beat you bad.
Yeah, well, I just figured maybe you guys could set up a little lobster versus whatever kind of bet.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe we can do that.
What does Cleveland have that Boston would want? A baseball team.
That we could.
Yeah, a baseball team.
That's a good question.
Yeah, what is... What what is Cleveland noted for? Like seafood, lobster, and all that kind of stuff would be
spam.
Here.
Spam, you know, punch and meat.
No, we don't. The only fish we have is walleye. Really.
Pierogies.
Cleveland's known for pierogies.
Oil
yeah.
refiners.
I see.
And
do you have pierogies there in Boston?
I'm sure we do somewhere because we have all kinds of specialty shops.
Yeah, it's a big Polish community here in Cleveland, and they make those little stuffed, whatever they make pierogies out of.
Potato and pasta?
Yeah, President Clinton wanted some. He came here.
Every time he comes, he goes, the Parma pierogi.
Yeah, he goes to that place and pegs out. I want some baked beans, Boston baked beans. Are they actually baked beans or are those little cans?
Yeah, no, we do have Boston baked beans. As a matter of fact, at one time, the Saturday night meal, kind of the traditional meal, was baked beans and brown bread. Did you ever taste brown bread?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. I don't know that still exists so much anymore.
My grandmother used to make that, Norm. I miss that.
That would kind of like put a damper on the activities later in the evening, wouldn't it? All those beans.
All the beans,
right.
I guess so.
Potato pancakes are big out here.
Oh, you mean...
have some potato pancakes.
My mother used to make bean soup.
We had a different name for potato pancakes. That's an ethnic food, and we call them...
Latkes.
Latkes, yeah, that's a... Is that Polish or
no, it's
German?
Jewish.
No,
it's,
I know
it's German, too, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, most Jewish food, I know it's Jewish, but I thought most Jewish food is adapted from... whatever the country the Jews were getting thrown out of it at the time. And so I didn't know whether it was Germany or Poland at the time.
It's probably a combination. Didn't Germany own Poland for a while?
For a little while,
I think
though.
So.
I think everybody owned Poland at one time or another.
They gave it back.
Yeah, but...
We don't want it.
My grandfather, my father's father, came to this country from Poland, and I never stopped thanking him enough, even though he's been dead since 1906. I keep thanking him for... Anyway, hey, Tim... Thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot, Norm.
I forgot you were still on the line, so let me get rid of you. Is it okay?
All right.
I just got rid of him.
All right, we can try another call from here.
Okay.
Our lines have lit up with you here.
Oh, well, that's great. I'd love to talk to him.
Right, we could try Riff here.
I don't know.
No, we'll hold off on Riff.
Yeah.
Another one of our regular callers. Let's go to line four. Hi, who's this?
This is Drew.
Hey, Drew, how are you?
Okay.
You're on with Norm Nathan in Boston.
Yes, I have a question for Norm. What nights are you on, and what are your hours?
Now, the nights I'm on are just weekends now. Friday, Saturday, Friday night from midnight to 5 a.m., Saturday from 11 p.m. to about 4:30 a.m., and then Sunday just a couple hours, except every now and then I work the entire week, which will be the case in about 2 weeks.
That's when Bob Raleigh goes on another soiree.
Yeah, that's right. He's probably out there looking for women. And so I come in and I just hang around.
How old is Bob Raleigh?
Bob Raleigh is a lot older than he'll admit.
Oh.
But I'm sure he's, I really don't know.
I had, you know, you get that vision of what someone looks like when they're doing a program, even though you've never seen them.
Yes.
I visualize Bob Raleigh as having spectacles and a slightly receding hairline and being about 37. I don't know why.
No, he has a son who's very close to 37.
Oh, my.
Yeah, he does, who's a weather guy. Out in San Francisco, on television out in San Francisco. So he must be up in his late 50s, 60s. I mean, he's got to be in that general area, I'm guessing. If he's listening now, he's probably throwing things at the radio and can hardly wait to get back at me in some vicious way. But I think that's so. But I don't know exactly. No, he doesn't wear glasses. Oh, I guess he does wear glasses, but the picture you painted of him isn't quite like he looked.
Drew, anything else?
Oh, one thing, Gilly, do you want a copy of the tape I'm making right now from the Boston station?
Sure.
Okay, I'll mail it to you.
Thanks
a lot.
Thanks,
okay,
Drew.
Good night.
Yeah, we on the big 13 here, we had some problems with the tape machine tonight.
So we wanted someone to tape your show.
Oh,
you sent it to us.
That is very, very nice.
Yeah, because you're 50,000 watts, and we're, slightly less than that.
Are you? Because I thought you were. I thought you were 50,000 water too. No.
No, you're thinking of the other big one in town that we don't like to talk about.
That's okay. How we duped you into this whole arrangement.
Yeah, that's right.
I see. Okay.
You thought you were on the Too Many W station, in actuality.
Okay.
No, actually, ERE used to be a giant station, and of course, like you said, Mitch, we're going to make it into something big again. That's the plan.
I would think you already have. I can just have a feeling about that.
Well, normally we're so relaxed, but I'm a little nervous, you know, in the presence of you, because you're one of my radio heroes.
I think the station's bound to make it if you just keep ripping off WBZ.
Sure, if we keep stealing from Norm Nathan, we'll be ahead.
That's right. And well, that's the radio business, isn't it, Norm?
Now, that's kind of interesting, because there was a guy on WJR. You don't mind if I mention stations in other cities?
We have no, we don't care. No.
Okay, WJR is in Detroit.
760.
760. That's one of the big stations, clear channel at night and all that. There was a guy named Hines. I've forgotten his first name. Gee, that's
57.
Off. Oh, Bob Hines. Bob Hines. H-Y-N-E-S. And he's from a Boston family, but he did the all-night show and has been working out. He's retired now, but he worked out in Detroit a lot. And every now and then we tie up also and pick up his program while he picked up ours. And his cousin was Jack Hines, who still is on television news here.
He invented the pickle or something.
No, you're thinking of the other Hines.
Oh,
it's H-Y-N-E-S. Now, you insist upon H-E-I-N-Z. That's our Senator Kerry, who's married the Hines heiress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's Hines, but there's the other Hines, who was mayor of Boston at one time.
They make a fine ketchup.
Now, who was the guy that was mayor of Boston for a long time, an Irish fella, Ray something or other?
Oh, Ray Flynn, who's now ambassador to the Vatican.
Oh, really?
Is he really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he's been the ambassador to the Vatican for some time.
Well, he's got a rough job. Well, how big's the Vatican, a mile?
Well, I don't know.
It's not what you call one of your major huge countries in the world.
Nobody, no, he's certainly going to watch what he says.
Yeah, right. No big parties for him.
No speeding tickets either.
No, he can't just can't utter some obscenities just
right.
Casually, like, I don't know what the hell about that Vatican. What the heck? You know, something like that. He's got to be careful.
Why does he wear that funny hat?
Yeah, that's right. Looks to me like a yarmulke. What's he doing with that?
Right.
I suppose he eats latkes and wears a...
Hey, sister, can I get some more beans over here?
I miss the folks back home. Oh, this is the silly... Do you have any commercials to do?
No. No one sponsors our show whatsoever. No, we got rid of them all last couple
of
hours.
Oh, I see. Okay, because we have practically none of them here either.
But whenever you need to take a break, we'll take one with you.
Yeah, we'll gladly go out and have a cigarette.
We've got plenty of station promos and public service announcements to fill time.
Okay, hey, listen, tell me what colleges you guys went to.
I went to Cleveland State University.
Okay, and that's obviously right in Cleveland?
Yeah, right downtown. We like to call it the lovely concrete campus.
Yeah, I as well. I'm still going to Cleveland State University.
Are you a big guy on campus because you do a radio show and everything? Do the women flock to you?
No, actually, we were pretty shunned. They no one in our college listened to us. We had a following outside in the city, but the college itself really didn't know much about us.
And Mr. Wainstead is the general manager of the college radio station right now, so he gets all the women.
Yeah.
So you have a staff composed of a lot of young people.
Oh, it's thousands, Norm.
And of young people, that's really nice.
Or at least 80, yeah.
What's the format of I know this is will be boring to people in your area who already know the answer, but WERE in Cleveland, now what do you do the rest of it, like 24 hours a day? What's the general form? Is it all talk radio?
It's an all-talk station.
It's a lot of syndicated shows. We have G. Gordon Liddy and Don and Mike.
Don and Mike. And
Tom Likas.
Stan Majors.
Yeah, Stan Major. Is he on anywhere in Boston? He's some guy that talks about politics for hours and hours and hours.
No, Tom Likas used to do a show here in Boston.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of interesting because a lot of people ask me whatever happened to Tom Likas, but he's with you guys at ERE in Cleveland.
Well, he's syndicated.
Yeah, he's from
LA. Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's on a lot of stations, not just ours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's out of Los Angeles, I think.
Oh, okay, because he had some kind of legal problems for... doing physical harm, or allegedly doing physical harm to his wife. Did you know that?
No, we did not know
Oh, yes.
Oh, my.
Notice the way.
We're getting real dirty here. I'm sure the man's been a lover.
I saw him on TV. He didn't look like the type to marry.
That's right. He's kind of a heavy set guy.
Well, he looked like Elton John in a way. I saw him on one of these cable channels where they actually show someone doing a talk show on radio.
It was C-SPAN.
That's about the most boring thing I've ever seen, watching somebody do a radio show.
He had big fuzzy glasses, right?
Yeah, big glasses, and they combed his hair forward over his bald spot.
hey, would you like to hear one of our promos for one of our shows here?
I'd love to.
It's a brand new show, and we just kind of found it quite humorous.
Oh, this is great.
Thanks, Ox, for grabbing this. Here we go. Here's one of the new shows here on WERE in Cleveland.
What is the wrong for the money?
Hello, rock and roll capital of the world. This is the king of rock and roll, Elvis Aaron Presley. I'm WERE, 1300 in Cleveland, the rock and roll capital of the world. Hey, give me a call at 578-1300 each Wednesday night between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. We'll talk about the past and the present with host Don Elvis Wright.
That's great. That's a funny commercial. And, of course, you are the key rock and roll. You got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we're really excited. It's actually finally built. It's a reality. You drive down East 9th, and there's a stadium, and right next to it is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they're having a nice big concert at the stadium coming up with all kinds of major artists.
Now, when is that open? Is that this fall?
I think September is the big opening. And right next to it, they're building the Great Lakes Science and Something Museum.
The marina, right. The whole waterfront area has been a area of serious development in the last several years.
A big aquarium. It's really going to be nice.
Oh, that's lovely. We have John, who's in his car right at this moment, would like to talk to us all. Hi, John.
Hi, guys. Hey, I got to let you know that I got my stat in college radio, but I decided that I didn't want to make the jump to the big time as an engineer.
Right.
So I had to get a cushy government job instead.
And where did you start? What station did you work at?
I was chief engineer for WJUL up at University of Lowell.
Oh, really?
I worked on the engineering staff for 5 years, from 76 to 81, and a couple of years of that was the chief engineer.
Why did you turn down radio? Did you find it boring?
No, I liked radio. I just, my true love in life was manufacturing, so I took a different career path. I already had my first class license when I was in high school, and when I got to college, it just made me a natural, and I needed a chief engineer with a license, and said, hey, I've got one. So I was crowned chief engineer.
And so doesn't sound like that was too long ago. You sound like a young guy.
This was a long time ago.
Really?
But I've been out of school, it'll be 20 years next year.
Yeah?
Anyway, I don't know if this is going to get by the census, but Tom Likas is on Westwood, syndicated through Westwood One.
Oh, is it?
No, this will get by the census. What census? What census
well,
do you think we have?
It's going to get better. I wonder if these guys know of the alleged mysterious circumstances of which he left Boston.
You mean about the problem with his wife?
Yeah.
I was just suggesting that he was charged but allegedly he had been in some fisticuffs or had caused some physical harm to his wife.
Well, I don't think it was alleged. I think he was convicted because he had to go to spousal classes, as I remember. But he left the big 50 kilowatt station down the dial under less than perfect circumstances.
Yeah, that was WRKO in Boston.
Well, I don't like that. I don't like. As Joe Fitzgerald calls it, I think I've said this before to you, it's not a radio station, it's a swamp.
I like Joe, and I like his definition of that.
Yeah.
That's really
good. Likas is Westwood One. I was wondering how those guys, what sort of response you got about G. Gordon Liddy, because he's been pretty popular in the press as of late.
Yeah, there was a big stink over that one shot to the head, one shot to the groin thing.
Yeah, there were a lot of complaints. We don't normally get a lot of reaction from Mr. Liddy here, but apparently there are a lot of people around here who are upset about that.
And we were told by management, you do a fun show, keep it that way.
Do fun.
Don't talk about serious stuff and get all the people riled up and make them call and complain. That's why they like us so much.
I get into this. I just got out of work a few minutes ago. So if I ask you questions that, now how many watts are you guys out there?
5,000.
That's pretty good for a, so you guys are, you know, a pretty good sized station. I'm used to the little 10 watt stations. I had more trouble with 10 watt stations when I was an engineer than I, you know, protected stations that have been there for, WJUL in Lowell, Massachusetts was one of the first FM directional stations in the country.
Now, Lowell, isn't that where Betty Davis was from?
I think
yes,
so.
Yes,
Ed McMahon, too.
Ed McMahon also.
Ed McMahon also, yes. But, and, of course, Paul Tsongas, the former senator, lives there now in Lowell. And also, Ray Goulding of the... Are you familiar with the team of Bob and Ray?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Ray Goulding is from Lowell, from that area.
I was thinking of a phone call you had last night when some guy asked you, we went into a big spiel, and then he said, what do you think, Norm? And you said, I think you sound like a character from a Bob and Ray
routine. Yeah, I thought he did. Yeah,
well, he did.
He had a funny way of talking. But, yeah, Lowell is an interesting city. It has a national park there now based upon the mills, the old mills that built up the city at one time.
Yeah, we're going to see how Lowell comes across. There's a big controversy now about that HBO thing that's coming up about Lowell and drugs. And, you know, not for nothing, but why does the Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts have to write HBO and say, don't air this show? It's not true. You know?
I don't know, because he's thinking of running for governor. That's Harshbarger, who's a decent guy. He's our Attorney General here. And that's the only reason I can think of. I think people go crazy when they're looking for a higher office, and they begin saying really stupid things.
He must have inherited something from the old Secretary of State there. But anyway, hey guys in radio, don't take it too seriously. It's not too fun. My father told me it was a bunch of guys stabbing themselves each other in the back for a $7,000 a year job. And to tell you the truth, I found that was true in my. In my case, I still do consulting. I'm one of these guys that made some money on the side from the deregulation when they fired all the chief engineers. But don't take it too seriously. There is life after radio.
We stab each other in the back for nothing.
That's how we are. But
okay.
Hey, good night, guys.
Good night, John. That's kind of funny.
You know, there was another guy in radio. I wonder whatever happened to him. It was named Bob Lassiter. He used to be on WLS out of Chicago.
Yeah, no, I don't know that name.
He called himself the Magnificent Lassiter, and he had this very dry approach. He would tell people, he'd say, please don't say hello to me. I'm fine. Don't ask me how I am. I'm fine. And people would call and say, hi, Bob, how are you? And he'd go ahead, please. And he had a real attitude problem. But
he was a happy guy.
But that was his act, and I thought it was fascinating radio. One Saturday night, he went on for 3 hours and never took took commercials, but he never took a phone call. And he kept saying, I'll give you those numbers in a minute. And he told his life story and how he got involved in radio, and I was... fascinated.
Yeah.
I couldn't leave.
One of the things people do, though, when they call you, they say, how are you tonight? And everybody does that. After about the 90th person who says, how are you tonight? And you've already answered that many times, you want to think, but they just use that as kind of an opening line to get into the conversation. But it does kind of slow things down, and it gets kind of boring after a while, so I can understand how you feel that way.
Yeah, you say, well, I was fine until people have asked me this for 3 hours. Now I think I might be a little ill.
That's
not
right.
Fine anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not, especially when I hear your voice, which grates on me. I'm ready to throw up, for God's sake.
Well, we're going to try another call, if that's okay.
Fine.
You don't mind? Let's try... Pete, welcome to Night Talk and to Norm Nathan in Boston.
Greetings, gentlemen. I already know how you are.
Okay.
How are you,
Pete?
I'm spanking good.
Well, that's good.
No one asked the callers how they
are. Yeah, right. we care about you, Pete.
I appreciate it. You guys run a great show. I mean, I could be at a party, and if there's a radio, I'll try to put it on.
Aww.
Wow, you know, isn't that great? That's
I'd
great.
Say I'm a little bit more cool than a lot of the callers who, I think they're just stuck home.
Well, careful now, Pete. You can't tell other people you're cool unless they say so.
Okay.
Do people think you're cool?
Definitely.
Has anybody said, Pete, you're a cool guy?
Sure.
Okay.
But,
well, then you're cool.
All right.
What's
with this with the ratings?
Oh, they're up, up, up.
Up, up, up. We're the men. We're coming. Now, we're going to be the show that you're going to be able to say, I listened to them when they were nobody.
Yep.
Now, this is on ERE, or how does this all come into it?
well, we talked about the ratings here earlier. What they are is our ratings on ERE.
And we also have a, and I don't mean to cut you off, Phil, but we just were reminded to let everybody in Boston and in Cleveland know about our email address. It's nighttalk@nacs.net. And you can email us here.
Yeah, I don't know a thing about computers.
What, Steve, what is that again? Is it, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Night Talk with two T's. Night Talk.
N-I-G-H-T-T-A-O-K, one word. nighttalk@nacs.net.
Hey, you guys, what do you think is the big attraction to talk radio? Why do people like it? Why am I such a talk show whore? I love it.
I don't know.
I can't get enough of it, unless it's sports talk, and then I want to vomit.
I think a lot of people like to live vicariously through someone else. You know, if you're a little bored and you turn on the radio, maybe you can hear somebody embellish about their daily life, and, you know, it's kind of exciting to listen in. Maybe you feel like you're eavesdropping over the back fence, or you're on a party line, and nobody knows you're there.
I think it's a matter of somebody keeping you company when you're doing the dishes.
Well, exactly. Like Steve said, it's an opportunity for you to have friends that you may not normally have, or if you are a well-liked person, which a lot of our listeners aren't.
It's eavesdropping for
me. It's eavesdropping for
you? Yeah, I like to hear, you know, Norm talk about the dirt on Tom Likas.
Oh, Mr. Nathan.
I think maybe part of it is the fact that it's spontaneous, and there isn't too much spontaneous radio. I mean, not on record shows or anything. And so on talk shows, you know, I mean, whatever, it's live, and people are saying things that they feel at that moment, and maybe that's one of the things, you know. You never know what's going to happen in the next minute or so.
Yeah, I always listened to talk radio ever since I was a little kid, and I thought, you know, someday I'd like to try that, because it seems like it's a lot of fun. You know, most people that do a talk show seem like they're having a good time doing it, and by golly, it is a lot of fun.
Can we pick up WBZ in Cleveland?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, you can pick up BZ. I listen to Norm Nathan's show all the time.
That's how we arrange this.
Is there any way you can buy, like, a super antenna for, like, an AM radio?
Yeah, they had one.
This station barely comes in that well most of the time.
I don't know what it was called. They had some sort of antenna you could buy. Norm, do you know it was some... They had an advertisement.
Hold on a minute here. I've got...
Hey, Phil, where
are
you?
In my suitcase,
I mean,
here.
You can't pick us up in South Euclid.
It's kind of spotty.
Because we're directed towards the east there.
Go outside. Yeah, we've been told that we're big in South Euclid.
Yeah, we're big in South Euclid.
In fact, Councilman Mo Romeo, we talk about him all the time.
Yeah, we have a councilman out here. You want to tell the story?
Well, what was the councilman called the police because people were taking their garbage out too early. They were taking their garbage out before 5 o'clock, and Mo Romeo called the police on his neighbors.
Right.
Had them take their garbage back in until 7 p.m. Yeah.
Real popular councilman out there in South Euclid, the suburb of Cleveland.
That's
you guys
funny.
Have any popular or favorite talk shows? Like, of course, Howard Stern gets all the notoriety. But have you guys listened to Tom Likas? I think he's pretty good.
I listen to Tom Likas. I listen to Norm Nathan. I listen to Bob Morale. I listen to...
You don't listen to Rush Limbaugh, do you?
Occasionally, but not very often.
He's not even entertaining.
I listen to, what's his name, Park McPeg here in Cleveland, the guy on the 70W station. Let's be fair, Jazz McKay. We shouldn't bat
him. Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about Jazz McKay? Don't you get kind of sick of it?
Well,
it's
a lot of politics.
Well, he just talks about gun control.
Yep, a lot of gun.
What about that Rich Michaels guy during the day?
Well, I don't know.
He's like
McKay too.
No, they call him the Baby Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah,
and he hates it. Ooh. They write about him in the Plain Dealer, call him the Baby Rush.
Well,
who's the guy who used to be on 3WE who, if he was around now, would be syndicated and really popular?
Gary D.
Gary D.
Yep.
You ever hear of Gary D. Norm?
I have not. No.
He was our big shock jock here before it was popular thing to be a shock.
I think you broke the taboo on talking about penises and foreskin.
We should really get rid of that, shouldn't we? That's terrible.
Now, that's okay. Bostonians, I know, we tend to be kind of Brahmins and stuff and very cultured, but nonetheless, we still do have penises, so that's okay.
I can't believe it. Norm Nathan said penis.
Yeah, we were. They were trying to think of some way to zone them out of town because we felt we were above all that.
And thanks for the call, Phil.
Yeah, well, actually, we wouldn't be here without one.
Yeah, I think it sounded like Phil could hardly wait to hang up.
Yeah.
What if Katie from Malden? Malden is a city just outside of Boston. And Katie, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good morning.
This is the most unusual program you've ever heard, I'll bet you.
Yes, I've been listening to BZ for about 10 years, and I think it's wonderful.
So we're tied in with WERE in Cleveland.
Yes.
And WBZ in Boston. And we're trying to bring goodwill. We're thinking maybe Cleveland and WER could be kind of like our sister station, and we could have joint picnics and everything together and things of that nature.
That's great, because I go through Cleveland when I go to, I travel out to Minnesota about twice a year.
Yeah, do you like Cleveland? What kind of?
No, the traffic sucks.
Yeah, the roads aren't so good. We have a lot of congestion.
Oh, we don't do badly along those lines ourselves here.
No, we don't. So I get used to driving out there.
Yeah, see, Katie lives in one of the really expensive suburbs, Malden.
Oh, really expensive suburbs, my
head. She's got running water in her flat.
Yeah.
Well, have you already?
Yeah.
Oh, son of a gun. No, because I grew up in a neighboring city called Everett, which is right next to Malden.
Next door.
Yeah, and we used to think, boy, the women from Malden, the girls from Malden, boy, what they are really hot. They're really hot. So
ain't
we
like that anymore.
Oh, not at, well, I'm glad I'm beyond that now, so it doesn't matter to me. But at the time, almost any girl, any city provided better-looking women than in the town you grew up in. I don't know why that was. You kind of
were a kid.
But Malden caters to a lower class of women now?
No, it's just that it's not the same.
Well, it's a blue-collar city, and I guess it always has been.
Yeah. It's hard-working people.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Don't overdo that, Katie. Anyway.
What I call this, I love this format. I think it's great.
The format, which, you mean just kind of talking silly?
Yeah. Talking silly and the sister station, I think this, it's great.
I usually
work nights, and tonight's my night off, and I'm sitting here. I'm up all night.
And you're hearing us talk silly, and you think that's okay?
I think it's fantastic.
I think it's a new wave of the future in broadcasting. Maybe we'll have silly radio all day, all night, 24 hours a day.
Anyway.
Silly. What, me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Katie, that hurt.
No, you're silly anyways. I couldn't go to sleep without you.
Norm.
And she means that in the sensuous manner, sexual way. The point is that like you and like your boss, obviously, who said to you, I think this time of the night is a very tough time for a lot of people. People who may, excuse me for getting slightly serious, but people who might have lost their spouses or they're unhappy or they have an uneasy feeling about some problem that they have going. And I think this time of the day is particularly difficult for a lot of people. And so you tune in the radio and you get, you know, you get guys like Mitch and all of that. And here, I hope, too. And you can kind of laugh, and I think it makes you feel a little bit better. And I think that's the whole point of what this is all about. And it's not that we don't care about the world, even though that may be true, I don't know. No, but I think the point is that...
You want to make people feel better. Shut the radio off, and I won't. I leave it on all night.
He's jealous of me, isn't he, Katie?
Yeah.
Because he knows what kind of a guy I am.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we live by one of Norm Nathan's credos, and that's let's leave this world a little sillier than we found it.
That's right.
But you do my whole shtick. I can't believe that. I can't believe it.
They get you pegged, Norm.
What's that?
They get you pegged.
No, they really have. I'm very flattered by all of that stuff, Katie.
I think it's wonderful. I love the format.
Leave your husband and come away with me, Katie.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, the heck with that.
I don't think so.
We have one here, Marge. We've been trying to get her to leave her husband for us.
Oh, yeah.
She won't.
No.
My husband's one of the good ones.
I even know Jenna Rosa calls all the time. I hear that.
You really do listen. I can't believe that.
Yeah. I've been waiting all night for you to do your Mason Adams imitation.
Oh, okay. Look, Rossi. I've been trying to think of one of his lines.
With a name like Smuckers, it's got to be good.
Yeah, with a name like Smuckers, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And he's on, of course, the Lou Grant Show. He's the assistant to the publisher, you know, and he's always saying, hey, look, Lou, would you get Rossi to do it? I sent him a note, and I asked him to be on the show. I said, I do an imitation of you, and it wouldn't be kind of fun for us to both be kind of talking at the same time, see how close I get. And I've never received an answer. These guys have no senses of humor, these guys. You know, not at all. It's right. You hear me, Rossi? Do an article on no senses of humor among people, okay?
And you don't think you're silly.
I'm not. No. I don't know what to say to that. You don't think you're silly. Give me a better line than that, Katie. I don't know how to respond.
You're so silly. You're so lovable. You have to listen.
We didn't get a chance to do your news, Steve.
Okay.
We wanted the Bostonians. Would that be the correct?
Bostonians,
yes. Our New England, yeah, New Englanders, Bostonians, all that is good.
We're going to throw in one news, blotter for you.
Okay.
You know what I don't know is when I go out to...
Or maybe two. Okay, this is Rocky River, Ohio, from the Sun Herald at 9:30 a.m. on July 13th. An irate customer tried to return a trimmer still full of gasoline to Builder's Square on Center Ridge Road. The store wouldn't accept the trimmer, so the customer dumped the gas on the sidewalk, an act which earned a littering citation from police. Lakewood, Ohio, July 23rd. Even the rain couldn't revive the man who was taking a nap at 1:30 in the morning on a lawn at Nicholson Avenue and Clifton Boulevard. Police said the man's wife arrived shortly after officers and said she would make sure he made it home.
Excuse me, Rossi, how come we missed those stories?
That's our
Rossi.
Big news. But okay. Actually, Norm, I guess we're going to have to go because we're up on the news here.
I know we are, too. We have network news in about a half a minute, same as you.
Well, Norm, maybe we can do it again sometime.
I would love that, and I really appreciate talking to all of you guys. That's really great, and I hope everybody out at WERE in the Cleveland area realizes what precious people they have to listen to through the night.
Well, same with you, Norm. Okay. We appreciate it. You're definitely someone we look up to. So keep us.
Spring.
Oh, this past spring.
Yep, two tickets to an extravaganza that nobody I know wanted to go to.
What was the extravaganza?
Oh, it was a production of Henry Purcell's King Arthur. And it was a really ludicrous production, too.
Oh, really? Now, who put that on?
The Baroque Festival people.
Yeah.
Early music. The music was tremendous. It was lovely.
No,
was
I'm a big fan of Henry Purcell.
You are?
Yes, but I'm not familiar with the work you're talking about.
Oh, you know Dido and Aeneas.
No, I guess maybe I don't know as much about Henry Purcell as I'm pretending to know.
Maybe it's a different Henry Purcell.
No, this is the reason I know Henry Purcell is I once gave a reading at Symphony Hall, with the Boston Pops Orchestra and Arthur Fiedler and all that, on a child's guide to instruments of the orchestra, and I think the arrangement was, maybe it was written by Henry Purcell, and the arrangement was by somebody else, but Purcell was very much involved in that, and the work is great. It's a very exciting thing. So anyway, that's really one of the few things I'm familiar with so far as Purcell was concerned. Everybody else likes, and you don't dare express any kind of opposition for fear that people will think, well, is he ignorant? He doesn't know what he's talking about. As you get older, like my age, you don't really care about that. You either like something or you don't like something, and I have enough faith in my own judgment to allow me to express a thought, even though it may not be in the popular interest. But I think a lot of people feel the same way. I'm sitting there watching these ballets and thinking, oh, shut up, just dance. Do the stuff that you do well. And never mind that really stupid storyline. I'm sorry, I think I'm repeating myself now. Have you noticed that? Well, I've noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of nice. Now,
do you still ride him?
No, I really should every now and then, but I have not. I just have not ridden him for some time. I used to ride him quite a lot, or ride her, actually. She's a mare, and she's about 28 or 29 years old now. Yeah, so she's kind of an old horse, but having just seen her a few hours ago, I can report to you that she's in great shape. She looks really good.
Well, the new horse that they got, the one that was a racehorse, nobody wants to ride him. They're all afraid to be the first one to get on.
Oh, yeah, because they figure this horse is all keyed up and spirited and all that. It could be a problem. That's
yes,
true.
So I don't know what they're going to do. I think, meanwhile, they just like having him around.
Yeah, I would think the best bet is to get some experienced rider.
And a lot
just
of insurance.
kind of break the horse in, you know, enough so that the settler down. Maybe she doesn't even need settling down. Maybe she'll be all right.
Well,
right
they won't
the
know until somebody tries.
I know, and they're afraid to do that.
Right. Meanwhile, they just play it. They feed the carrots a lot and just give her a lot of love and attention.
That's true. The horse that I have, I actually bought for my youngest daughter, and then she got older and went to school, and I should have sold the horse at that point. But somehow it's like selling a pet dog or something.
Well, it becomes part of the family.
That's right. Even though I don't ride her much anymore, mm-hmm. There are people who come by who do ride her and exercise mm-hmm. her, but it is part of the family.
It's like any other animal that you take care of.
Yeah, it's like to see her out in the field there chewing away at the grass and stuff, and it's very picturesque and
nice. Yeah, you don't need a mower either.
Well, that's true.
A built-in mower.
That's true. Hey, you're okay, Ruth, and that's interesting. The molasses baby.
That's
rhymes, and it was written by Joanna, or at least the rhymes were compiled by her, Joanna Cole, C-O-L-E.
Oh, okay.
And the name of the publishers, it's called a Beech, B-E-E-C-H, Beech Tree Paperback Book.
Okay.
I thought there might be... Oh, well, here's an address if you want that, too, do you?
I'd appreciate it.
Okay, it says inquiries should be addressed to William Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, and Company... Incorporated. They are the publishers, and I guess this is a division of their company.
Okay.
It's 1350 1350 Avenue of the Americas,
mm-hmm.
New York.
Mm-hmm.
New York, New York, yes, sir. 10019.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is my daughter does do a lot of the little rhymes, and I hear them at school. And even though they're not the same ones I remember, they're like parts of that too. They've kind of like combined some of the ones I remember. So I thought something like this, which would give them a lot of different things, would be ideal.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them in here that the kids would get a kick out of.
Okay.
Hey, thank you very much for calling, Shirley.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Norm.
I don't blame you for challenging that. But there I was in a Red Sox uniform, and I got a huge, a big blown-up picture framed and everything of myself there. Is that exciting or what?
That is. I wish I could be in a baseball uniform.
I'm Jack Hart, WBZ 24. Well, you really want to admit that to you after that? what happened? I'm not sure. I think that must have been the crews out there doing some blasting. I think that probably is what it is. I think somebody's come closer. I don't want everybody to hear this because it might become a regular thing. Mm. But I think there are people out there to get you. I think so. You ready to play the dumb birthday games? That's probably somebody, one of the other members of the panel, because you always win.
Yes, indeed. And they're trying to bump me off.
They are trying to bump you off, and I think your life is in danger.
Uh-huh.
Hold on a minute while I call the WBC security guard.
All right, and I'm wearing my bulletproof birthday hat.
I think that is a good idea. Excuse me. WBC security guard?
Yeah?
I don't think he's going to be able to help you at all. Oh, do you have a commercial to play right now?
Oh, yeah.
Is it you screaming and yelling and carrying on in a big way, or is it somebody else?
No, it's me screaming and yelling and carrying on.
Oh, really? Kind of big, upbeat kind of stuff.
You betcha.
Okay, play it, and we have Harold Prince, a lot of Broadway producers are in the audience, and they'll be hearing you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll let a musical interlude in between words.
Good.
Golfers, already tired of the cold. And now for those wintertime blues. Join us in March for our exclusive Pete Dye Golf Cruise to the Southern Caribbean. Call 1-800-GREAT-SUN for details.
That was just so wonderful. Thank you very, very much. That was great.
Thank you.
Once again, The Vault gave us another excellent example of Norm and the show. Guests, interesting callers who sound like guests, Norm's wide-ranging appeal to all ages, as well as his influence on fellow broadcasters. And of course, plenty of trademark silliness. Thanks again for your patience in waiting for this episode, closing the vault, and leaving this world a little sillier than we found it. For Mexico, Dennis Webb, Marbles, Kaleidoscopes, Orange Crate Roulette, Jump Rope Rhymes, Old Man Kelly, the Archaeological Society of Maryland, Greenberg's Guide to Marbles, pocket knives, slingshots, Bert Cohen. The sphere is the most perfect form. Nibs, Nibsters, Aggies, and Stickers. Waukesha, Wisconsin. The American Craft Council. Marble Collectors of America in Northboro, Mass. Dapper O'Neill, Mitch Mann, Rick Gilly Gilmore, and Steve Wainstead in their show Night Talk on the Big 13, 1300 AM, WERE in Cleveland. Violating Your Own Rules, Minions and Sycophants. College Radio, The Comedy of Bereavement. Baked Beans and Brown Bread, Latkes, Ray Flynn, Cleveland State University, WJUL in Lowell, Bob and Ray, Faith in Your Judgments, Sunflower the Horse, Hope Shower, Ken Newman, Jack Hart, and the often imitated, but never duplicated, Norm Nathan. Stay smoochy, everyone! I'm Tony Nesbitt.